The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, first of all, Pielin, my presidency is not over. I've got another 5 years coming up. We're going to get this done. And absolutely we have strong support in the Latino community because they've seen what we've been working on. First of all, strengthening the economy. We just were able to get the payroll tax cut done. That provides 25 million Latinos with an extra $40 in every paycheck and is going to help strengthen the economy. We made sure that unemployment insurance got extended because the Latino community has been so hard hit. 1 million Latinos are going to be benefiting from that. The housing settlement that we just passed, which will help Latino families all across the country who were taken advantage of by subprime lenders to be able to stay in their homes.
There is the President of the United States of America appeasing the illegal alien community, saying that banks that took advantage of Latinos with the subprime mortgages, et cetera. He lied about everything he just said. The fact of the matter is America's per capita government debt is worse than that of Greece. A budget committee just came out with a report that shows a chart. You know, numbers don't lie except to Democrats who can't see the truth no matter what they're looking at. The per capita debt in the United States is $44,000 per person. The per capita debt in Greece is $38,000. Per capita debt in Spain is $18,000. So therefore, the per capita government debt in the U.S. of A. is worse than that of Greece. And here's Obama throwing money at Latinos, legal, illegal, it doesn't matter to him, simply to get this machine reelected. And he gets away with it. Why? It comes right back to the Republicans. There is no opposition party. There is a party committing suicide by, I would not even call these debates. I've said that today. You're not watching GOP debates. A debate would be the GOP debating with the communist in the White House. That would be a debate. Instead, you have a slimy vermin like John King of CNN asking set of questions one after the other, such as, Governor Romney, with regard to Iran, how do you stand, where do you stand on abortion? John King, Mr. Santorum, with regard to Iran and Israel, where do you stand on... this isn't the first time this ex-jock got away with this. This fallen jock. I mean, this guy is a nobody, which leads us right back to those who claim to be somebodies, the Republicans. If they're so damn smart, and if they think they're better at Obama, and they think they can run the country better than the Obama criminal machine, why are they permitting liberal scum like John King and CNN and Wolf Blitzer to run these so-called debates? Why are they submitting themselves to these things? I called it suicide by debate, but there is no debate. A debate would be forcing Obama to answer questions to each of the candidates. This is not a debate. This is a setup. So you have to ask yourself, again, why do you think the Republicans are submitting themselves to liberals running the debates? There's only one conclusion, and it's a conclusion I reluctantly drew months ago, and the conclusion is horrible, which is that there's a one-party system, a single party, a power structure that runs America. 4 years? No. 8 years, Republicans. We had that with Bush, and now it's going to be 8 years Democrat, even if it's a communist Democrat. They don't care. This way they can sit in the sidelines mooing about the fact that they're the party of X, fill in the blank. What do the Republicans stand for? Can anyone listening to this program, The Savage Nation, call this show at 1-800-449-8255 and tell me what the Republican Party at this time, seeing the candidates, stand for? How do they differ from the Democrat machine? Explain that to me. It's a very important question. I'll bet you don't even have an answer. I told you I'm in a resort community, so I picked up a newspaper. And the newspaper has a bulletin board in it while you're calling me on such an important question. Because I see the average person could care less about politics. They're stuffing their faces. They're guzzling the wine, beer, this, that. They don't care. They don't care who's in the White House. They could care less. They think it's all corrupt and all criminal. And as long as they can still buy a hamburger and stuff their mouths with a hamburger and a beer and put the hat on backwards and watch a moron throw a ball around, they don't care who's in the White House. And you know that and I know that. So I pick up the bulletin board from the local Florida newspaper. And here's on the local bulletin board. I say, is this what average people do on a Thursday night? Okay, here we go. Bingo, St. John's Catholic Church. Boca Raton Stamp and Coin Club. Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, Boynton Beach. Gamblers Anonymous and Gam Anon meetings at Olympic Heights High School, west of Boca Raton. Lecture. Well, I can't even read. Oh, health and education issues in Haiti and the local Haitian community. Lecture, school bully, how to stop it. Lecture, senior scams and how to avoid them. Recovery International, self-help for depression, anxiety, anger, panic, and compulsions. I should go to that one. You know, you do this for a living, and you watch men who should know better submitting to fallen jocks like the guy on CNN and not slamming him to the ground. I could have stopped John King with one. I don't care what he would have asked me. I would have just said, now listen to me. You're nothing but a paid hack for CNN. Here's what we're going to talk about right now. We're going to talk about how Obama has destroyed the entire world. He set the world afire in the Middle East. He has made Israel almost a non-existent nation. He has wrecked the economy. Now, who would stop anybody who would say that? CNN wouldn't stop the tape. The people would cheer. The country would say, at last, the leader has arisen. Instead, you got one putz after another answering to a fallen jock who probably had a D average in college. But that's what I say. So you look at the bulletin board. Lecture, senior scams and how to avoid them. Recovery International, self-help for depression, anxiety, anger, panic, and compulsions. This one actually caught my eye, the next one. Socrates Cafe Discussion Group at a certain library. Socrates Cafe Discussion Group. That's not bad. And a theater show, there's a theater show at a high school called Candida. For a minute, I thought it said cyanide. I'm so depressed from the Republicans that I changed Candida into cyanide. I looked at the paper. I said, wait a minute, there's a theater piece called Cyanide. Maybe I ought to go to that one. No, it's Candide. It's unbelievable to me what's going on in this country. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Yeah, various and sundry. So what do you want to talk about? Do you care about the election or what? What's going on here? Why are these Republicans submitting themselves to these lowlifes in the media? Why? Why do they even hold these so-called debates? They're not debates. Look at the question that the fallen jock, a man who couldn't even advertise underwear if he wasn't paid to be a hack, he gets up there and he says, well, Romney says Santorum isn't a fiscal conservative. What do you say about that, hey, Mr. Santorum? This is a debate? This is what American politics are? Pitting one moron after against another? So, I mean, I rest my case. No wonder Obama goes on a Hispanic radio show, Univision Radio, and talks about he has 5 years left and how he's helped the Latino community. Not distinguishing between legal and illegal, because you see, to a man like him, there is no distinction between legal and illegal immigrants. There's no distinction between legal and illegal businesses. As long as the money flows upstream into the DNC, it doesn't matter where it comes from. That's how millions of people see it. So what can I say to you? Why does the average man seem to not care about anything? And then the news from the military front is, if you really care about these things, it's heartbreaking. Two helicopters crashed in the desert of California on a training mission. Seven more Marines are dead. Why are helicopters crashing? What's going on? Now, on the face of it, you would say, well, it's just accidents, it's coincidental. The equipment's getting old, the maintenance is down under Panetta, because he's only concerned with diversity training and making certain that silos on nuclear submarines are converted to women's showers, so therefore they don't have money for spare parts for helicopters. That would be one conclusion. Then we have a U.N. general, a U.S. general, again apologizing. We have Obama apologizing to the warlord of Afghanistan, excuse me, President Karzai, or shall we say warlord Karzai, because of the riots in Afghanistan. Again apologizing. Did he ask for an apology from the warlord Karzai for the loss of two airmen who were shot in the back by an Afghani soldier who was supposed to be helping over there? I didn't hear him ask for an apology from warlord Karzai. Did you? No, so the whole thing's upside down. If you want to talk about it, we can, or you want to talk about any of these self-help groups that I discovered in a local paper. Which one sounds interesting to you? Let's see, Recovery International, for self-help for depression, anxiety, anger, panic, and compulsions. I was reading an article on, with regard to panic on the myth of the eight-hour sleep per night. And it says, we often worry about lying awake in the middle of the night, but it could be good for you. A growing body of evidence from both science and history suggests that the eight-hour sleep may be unnatural. Who am I glad to hear that? Whew. Whoa, missed that bullet. I have not had an eight-hour night without waking and stirring in my entire adult life. In fact, all of the health literature that your doctor has given you on virtually everything is wrong. I discovered this in my 30s when I had insomnia. I read a self-help book in my 30s that said, hey, hold on a minute. Just because you wake up in the middle of the night doesn't mean there's something wrong. It means you're not tired. So get up and do something. And then the self-help books showed you what you could do in 2 minutes. You could write this. You could write that. You can go to. You can walk around the block. Well, of course, not in San Francisco because the Occupy thugs will get you. But you could do things in the middle. You could look at the stars. You can get a telescope and learn the star formations. A lot of things you could do in the middle of the night, in other words. You might even read a book, God forbid. God forbid you might get one of those antiquated items between two covers with print in it and read one of them. But it turns out in people who've studied sleep in the past, it's amazing. A man did research on this, and it said that humans used to sleep in two distinct chunks. Would you believe this? And they had sex at certain times, too. People often had sex. A doctor's manual from 16th century France even advised couples that the best time to conceive was not at the end of a long day's labor, but, quote, after the first sleep, when they have more enjoyment and do it better. That's in the 16th century. We don't want to mention that around Rick Santorum. He may have to burn that book. But apparently there were first and second sleeps that disappeared during the late 17th century. And first and second sleeps occurred as a sleeping pattern around the world. You know what first and second sleeps are? This is very interesting. They fall asleep for a couple hours, and then they get up, and they do certain things, hang out, talk, right? And then they go back to sleep a second time. But we have adapted to the idea that we should sleep in an eight-hour block. But I think many of us don't sleep for eight straight hours because our natural bodily rhythm is for segmented sleep. As opposed to one long sleep. It's very interesting. And speaking of a long sleep, it seems America is in a long sleep. It seems that the entire Republican block of would-be candidates has committed harikari for the world to see, while the worst president in history, the most divisive president in history, the least loyal president in American history, is virtually getting away with anything he wants, while the liberals chew these candidates up. I'll be right back. Savage.
Just in recent days, you said this, quote, if you want a fiscal conservative, you can't vote for Rick Santorum because he's not.
Well, I'm looking at his historic record.
So this is what went on last night. This fallen gym teacher on CNN was asking absurd, stupid questions that any candidate for the presidency should have stopped and said, listen to me, dummy. Stop asking such setup questions. The American people deserve better than you. And unless they send someone in with a half a brain, we're not going to answer you. Here's what we're going to talk about. Instead, John King are asking Senator Santorum, regarding Obama's track record regarding Israel and Iran, why do you want to ban contraceptives? That's the kind of questions. I've never seen anything like this. I watched it for 15 minutes. I had to turn it off. I wasn't angry. I was sick. It was so destructive to permit these vermin, these solenterates, these worms, to defile the questions. Very sad for America to permit the Ayatollah in the White House to get away with this. It's unbelievable to me. 1-800-449-8255. What do you want to talk about? You want to eat your heart out and talk about this? You can. We're ready. It's over already. Oh, by the way, the Muslim who they had a constraint on the flight, the Continental flight from Portland to Texas, right? Constrained not by the TSA, constrained not by air marshals, not by Homeland Security, who've all said nothing. Constrained by American citizens because the lunatic was screaming Allah Akbar, how he hates women. Now his family is saying that he has a mental illness. How do they learn this before they even get here? The family already said he hasn't taken his medication for the last 3 weeks. What medication was that, hummus or pita bread? What medication didn't he take? The cousins and acquaintances of the Muslim living in Ashland said he didn't take his medication. So they already have a lawyer advising them. His teachers are saying he's very sweet. And he's a very, very sweet man. He's an artist and a musician. And then he went off his medication. It became worse. That's what happened. What you don't know is that the very same schizophrenic Saudi Arabian Muslim, Yazid Mohammed Abunyan, was arrested in Ashland, Oregon, after ramming a police car on purpose several times with three police cars in pursuit. He was arrested for DUI and released soon thereafter by the so-called police in Portland, Oregon. As you well know, the word Portland and police is an oxymoron. Abunyan was held for a few minutes for every charge under the sun and released. And then he was on the plane doing the crazy stuff. Thank you, police in Portland.
Savage.
I'm eating my breakfast, reading the Florida Sun Sentinel bulletin board. Thursday, American Italian Club of the Palm Beaches, dance to live music, St. Mary's Rec Hall. The best 60s plus singles group around, Temple Sheree Shalom, west of Boynton Beach, $3. Imagine, yeah, $3 for a club. Can you imagine this? What a crowd you'd meet there? My God. Bingo, 1 to 3 p.m., St. John's Catholic Church. Boca Raton Stamp and Coin Club. Could you know, you just reading these things is a pleasure. Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous. I'd like to go into a place like that. What is a food addict? That's also become an illness? Food act? That's an addiction? That's an illness covered by Obamacare. Food addiction. What else is an addiction? Lecture. Senior scams and how to avoid them. Well, that would be anything put before you by a Democrat. Theater. Cyanide. I mean Candide, right? I did that joke already. That's because I grew up using cyanide. My life would have been so different if instead of forcing me to clean bronzes with cyanide in the basement of a store, my father gave me Candide and read it to me. He couldn't help it. He was poor. He needed a child laborer for nothing an hour. I grew up in a Dickensian time. Dickens, your son worked for nothing. You got room and board. What more do you need? You're going to work. Tow that barge. Lift that bale. Boca Raton Stamp and Coin Club. I can't imagine the grifters that would be in there. I can't imagine like guys drooling on themselves from Brooklyn who moved down here like 12 years ago. This is what they do at night. They go to a Stamp and Coin Club. They would all look like elderly Seinfelds, I would imagine, drooling on their stamp collections, coming in like raincoats stained with tuna fish stains, and you know, from the pocket that they brought down from the Bronx. They wouldn't even give up the raincoat. What is Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous? What is a food addict? You mean someone who likes to eat? My mother would call him a big eater. What do you mean a food? Now it's an illness. Food addicts. You hear? They're crazy. Everything is crazy in the world. Bully now. The bully is a new code word for everything. Everything is school bully. You were never bullied as a kid? The entire structure. I mean, take a look at the world you live in. What do you mean school bullying? What is that a code word for? We know what that means. Theater, self-help for depression, anxiety, anger, panic, and compulsion. Sounds like an average New Yorker. Why do you need self-help for that? The average New Yorker living in South Florida is depressed, anxious, angry, panicky, and compulsive, which is why they moved here. What do you mean? You see these guys walking around here. Unbelievable. Bank raid suspect takes fright. The writer meant takes flight. But since they hired someone from American Atlantic University who came from another country and can't write English, bank raid suspect takes fright. That's what passes for an article. A bank robbery suspect fled a Chase Bank empty-handed on Monday after he thought the teller triggered an alarm, according to Boca Raton police. The attempted holdup happened just after 1 p.m. at blah, blah, blah. A man entered the bank and gave the teller a note stating, "Give me $40,000, no die pack or no alarm." Police ask anyone with information to call. No description, no black, white, pink, yellow, nothing. That's the new police work. They're not allowed to describe the suspect. Just any information. Who's going to call you with no description, nothing? Unbelievable. Crazy. There's a big ad in there for holistic health. I just discovered it. I was into holistic health 30 years ago. Holistic health doesn't exist anymore. It's nothing. It's a business. Here's Rona Zelinka joins others in a warm-up doing a yin yoga class. Oh, and then there's a big thing here in the paper next to an ad on fried chicken for Kabbalah. I saw a big ad for fried chicken somewhere, and then there's another one. The Kabbalah group is coming from L.A. to teach Jews who don't know their own religion how to join Madonna's Kabbalah group. You hear a thing like this? Unbelievable to me. Then I read the obituaries. You try to pass over them. Sentencing postponed for man who beat wife. Not that interesting. The funeral home. Obituaries. You ever read the obituaries? I knew someone who calls himself a journalist. He started writing the obituaries for a newspaper. It's now 40 years late. He's still writing the obituaries for a Jewish newspaper. But he considers himself an equal to Mr. Pulitzer. Bob Green, 80, ex-husband of Anita Bryant. Oh, Anita Bryant. Remember her with the orange juice? God rest his soul. Bob Green, a one-time radio DJ who married pop singer and Miss Oklahoma Anita Bryant, was found dead January 20th in Miami Beach home. He was 80. Mr. Green managed his wife's rise to stardom as an entertainer and Florida citrus spokeswoman. Remember then the gay people hated her for something? They wouldn't drink the orange juice. They wouldn't drink the Kool-Aid. So he's dead. Well, it's the way of all flesh. Then they show the... Bob Madden, Navy vet honored 54 years after his dies at 85. Calling all foodies, be social. Now open Sundays, a jewelry. They're trying to get gold now from old people. This is a scary story here. This is a crazy story. Want to hear a crazy story I saw while eating a greasy lunch? You never believe this. Deputy pleads not guilty to stealing a woman's cell phone. I said, what? This is when I was eating the bread and butter, even though I said no butter. They're nice people in a Cuban restaurant, but how many times do I have to say it after 4 years? I'll have the bread, no butter. Comes with the butter. I'm so hungry, I ate the bread and butter. Then my knee hurts me all afternoon. BSO deputy pleads not guilty to stealing a woman's cell phone. A Broward sheriff's deputy accused of stealing a woman's cell phone and making racial slurs during a road rage incident in May was formally arraigned Wednesday. Deputy Paul Pletcher entered a written plea of not guilty through his attorney, Alberto Millian. You want to hear the story on this one? He was placed on paid leave the day after a woman called 911 to say a deputy had pulled her over, screamed profanity, and stole her cell phone after he realized she was recording the incident. Pletcher was suspended without pay on January 30, the same day he turned himself in. A seven-year veteran, Pletcher had been under investigation for months. Well, a crazy story. Nadia Osorio, oh, here we go already. On May 23rd, Nadia Osorio told police she was in a truck waiting at a light on Broward Boulevard on the State Road 7 when a friend noticed the deputy yelling at them. Pletcher was off duty and out of uniform at the time, but armed and driving his patrol car. Osorio, age 38, told police the deputy gave her the middle finger, so she gave him one too. Oh, yeah, I'm going to believe the woman now, not the cop. Pletcher turned on his flashing lights and pulled her over. That's what Osorio told a friend to videotape the incident on our cell phone. Yeah, that's the constituency for Obama. They got to come over here with the video already, the cell phone. Right off the boat, they come here already. They got the ACLU waiting for them. Here's the first six words they learn in English. English. Me, immigrant. You, racist. ACLU with a phone number. That's before they get off the boat. They know already who to call. Bulletin board. Oh, I did this already. American Italian Club of the Palm Beaches. Dance to live music. 7 p.m. tonight. I missed that already. Oh, it's on the 20. St. Mary's Rec Hall. Florida Mango Road. What are you doing in a... What are you doing in American Italian Club? I don't belong to any clubs. I don't belong to any ethnic club, no religious club, nothing. Am I the only man on earth who doesn't belong to... Sometimes I wonder. I'm going through my life, I don't belong to anything. I was once a Boy Scout. And that was the last thing I remember belonging to, other than going to university. But I never belonged to a fraternity, because I never liked people in fraternities. I thought the friends I had who went into fraternities were morons, basically, who couldn't make it on their own. They needed Zeta, Beta, Shmeta, Heta, Reta, Meta, Data. You know what I'm saying? So they went into a fraternity. They thought that they would meet women. Nothing. Most of them became bill collectors or lawyers. I never belonged to anything. Do you feel like you're missing something if you don't belong to like the Irish Jig Club or the Italian Pasta Club or the Jewish Matzah Making Organization? What should you join if you're a person who's not into these things? Does it improve your life to have a club? Boca Raton Stamp and Coin Club. I can't imagine. I wish I had the time to go to some of these things just to meet the people. What an incredible group, that Boca Raton Stamp and Coin Club. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine what would go on in there. Unbelievable. The guys bring down their stamp collections from Syosset, Long Island, and they retire here. And they meet fellow stamp collectors. Oh, by the way, speaking of clubs, I saw that an American winemaker is going to be making wine in China. They're partnering with the Chinese. Can you imagine that? Red wine in China? Chateau Mao? I mean, that would be a good name for it, wouldn't it? Chateau Mao would be nice, or maybe they could use their friend from Vienna. Chateau Ho, that would go very well. You want some Chateau Ho? Oh, try the Chateau Ho. Oh, no, I prefer the Chateau Mao myself. I would never, ever drink wine from China. Imagine the melanine in the bottles, number one. Poison grapes with pesticides in them. Adulterated with, leftover antifreeze is what I'm probably getting. A red wine from the hills of China. Okay, but, you want to get it on a lower rate. The right car at the right payment. You know, it's fun to actually buy a newspaper. I never do it when I'm home, but like when I'm traveling, I like to buy a paper. There's something about the smell of ink on your fingers that I think it's actually a weight loss diet because your hands smell so bad, it cuts down on eating bread, for example. I'm lower on carbs here because of the smell of the ink on my hand. Oh, this is sad. Wheelchair-bound woman drowns in pond. You can't laugh about that. You can't even control. There's a lot of old people who go off the road a lot. I saw a sign on the side. There's like bike paths down here, which are nice. I'm a bicyclist, but I would never ride a bicycle down here on a road. You got people, octogenarians, they can't see over the steering wheel. They look like Mr. and Mrs. Magoo. They have no idea where they are. They drive by celestial navigation. They're so low in the seat, they have to look up at the stars. The problem is there are no stars during the day. They're knocking bicyclists off like 10 pins. So the police had to put up these signs on the side of the road, like, in lights. And it says, drivers, look out for bicyclists. And then the next thing that comes up to show that they're fair is bicyclists, no more than two abreast. I would like to see that sign in California. You got six of these vermin lawyers. They take over roads. You don't know what to do with them. They're the worst scum on the earth. By the way, this is an interesting story, and thank God there's some truth came out. They did a survey of the most hated state in the country. California's number one. The most hated state, despised around the country. So listen to what the schmucks in San Francisco write. Well, they hate us because they're jealous. You hear? They have no idea why they're hated. They're like Democrats. They're like in denial. They drank the Kool-Aid. Why do Americans hate California and Californians? Oh, they're jealous of you. They're jealous of your income. Those in the Occupy Oakland group, they're jealous of you because you have such freedom. Freedom to rattle your chains, you moron. Yeah, and I drive these cars. I ride a bike down here, but I go across the road into the residential area. One thing I like about down here, I'll tell you, is the bridges that go up and down. That is really something to watch. I try to time it so I don't have to sit on the roadside, with the people from Jersey Shore licking an ice cream cone with the wife-beating shirts. I don't want to hear that conversation. I can do without it. You know, once is quite it's charming enough. What outfits down here? My God, you can't believe it. How a man could dress up like this with shorts and a wife beater shirt. Oh, listen to this one. I'm walking in the streets last. You can walk around at night. You can hear things. The one thing I like about East Coast people is they talk. California, everyone's like subversive. Everything's covert. They're like cats and kittens. Nobody says a word in California. You're afraid you might hear them. They don't talk. New Yorkers, East Coast, they talk. So I'm in the streets last night after the show. I went for a walk in one of the towns. I'm not going to tell you where. I did see Hot Rod Alive Tuesday night. That was fun for like one set. I'm walking in the street. I'm like tired after the show. It was a bad day for me. I was exhausted. Then the debate knocked me out. It was just a dreadful thing. But I didn't want to like lay in bed. So I got up, you know, went out. I don't even know what I ate. I ate nothing. It's not your business, right? I don't even. Well, I was going to talk about food again later, but because I think I have food addiction. I may go to that group later tonight if it's open at midnight. I'm walking in the street. It's packed. Packed. Packed, I tell you. After all, the American children are off on the East Coast for President's Week. Not day now. They took them out of school for a whole week so they can learn how to, surf. In China, they're teaching them calculus in the fifth grade. Our children are learning how to take vacations and collect welfare or whatever they're learning, how to put a condom on a toy cucumber. Three women, early 20s, are walking together. I didn't pay much attention. So many people, blah, 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 but I look at people. I'm a people watcher. I love looking at people. I miss it in California. There's nothing to look at there. Everyone looks the same in California. It's like one bland like dummy, like a department store dummy in California. At least here there's a diversity of white people. You hear what I just said? The towns, by the way, it's very interesting. It's all Caucasian, 99%. And diverse, the Caucasian groups, interestingly enough. You know, not all whites look alike. Very diverse. Now, you may have forgotten that. So, no, is that illegal, Beowulf, what I just said? All whites don't look alike? There's nothing wrong with that, is there? It's pretty good. So three women are walking. And here's what I overhear as I go by. Like I'm hitting a stop set. One says to the other, why are you pulling your dress up? The other says to her, because she's showing too much. The other one says, she's got a perfect body. Let her do what she wants. I couldn't believe it. But it was interesting. It was like three chicks, I was saying, three girls, 22, 23, 21. Why are you pulling your dress up? Because she's showing too much. She's got a perfect body. Why can't she show it? See, in every group of three women, there's one hot one. Then there's like the supporting staff. They're like the supporters. One tells her she's gorgeous, and the other one sort of mocks her and keeps her under control so she doesn't get carried away in like a bar. No, it's a very interesting thing. They're like wingmen, in the Air Force. She's like in the front, the one with the good body, right, the workout body. And then there's the trailer, the left and right. I swear to God, it was a real conversation. Why are you pulling your dress up? Because she's showing too much. She's got a perfect body. Leave her alone. I swear to you. I'll be back.
Savage.
Here we are, Savage Nation. Americans hate California. It's the most despised state in the nation, poll finds. But the lying fools in the local papers say, but why? Maybe they're just jealous. They're jealous of our low standard of living and our degeneracy. When Oscar got it right, oh, God, they're going to start in with that now? Oh, my God, it wasn't enough with one thing after another, one junkie after another, one drug addict after the other. Now, more Oscars now. They gussy themselves up. They come out of rehab. They clean themselves up for the Oscar night. They look like they're clean for the moment. They have to import a boxcar full of coke into L.A. for that event. Like, it starts weeks in advance. They need a caravan to get them to go to the Oscars or not, because they're so frightened of each other. And the ego loss. Biker guilty of killing Hell's Angels chief. Christopher Ablett, 31, get life for stabbing and shooting the head of the Hell's Angels Frisco chapter. We'll leave that one alone. Thank you. Look at this great. Oh, wow, we got a great caller here. I got a lot of calls. Don't think I'm just. I'm not talking about Quran burning. I'm not talking about generals on their hands and knees. I'm not talking about Obama genuflecting to the warlord of Afghanistan instead of demanding an apology for his boys killing two of our men by shooting them in the back. I can't take it anymore. I can't deal with politics. Is it any wonder I'm reading, like, events around the... I told you I read this already. America's per capita government debt worse than Greece. And Obama's up there on a Spanish stage, and, telling how good he is for the Latinos, irrespective of the non-citizens. Las Vegas, Richard, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, I'm a psychologist. You were just talking about the attractive girl with the other girls with him.
Yes.
That's kind of a psychological thing. I found that you'll always usually find a very attractive girl with one friend. Their friends usually are not near as attractive for comparison purposes.
So the good-looking one chooses them. So they stand out. I see.
Correct. It's also a lot of the attractive ones have a low self-esteem for some reason, and they need this comparison to build up their ego and their self-esteem.
I heard when I was a young man that some of the most gorgeous women, I mean the top, the actresses and models, would look at themselves in the mirror and see ugly women.
Correct.
You're in Vegas. Do you see that with the showgirls?
Yes, they weigh 16 pounds of makeup. And when you see most of them without their makeup, they're not near what you think they look like.
Well, look, everything is an illusion up to us. You know, they live in illusion. Women are the side of the species that we use for our illusions, don't we? Men are not supposed to dress up in the peacock feathers in our society. But if you go to, you know, as an anthropologist earlier in my life, certainly I don't have to spell this one out for you as a psychologist. In many societies, it's the men who wear the fancy feathers.
But men don't do the same thing. If a good-looking guy doesn't choose his friends to be just the opposite.
That's an intriguing one. What do they choose? They're alone to stand out?
No, they want the same. You usually see a bunch of guys at a bar or friends.
Like three jocks together. They all look good. Interesting. You see that? You never know what you're going to hear on the Savage Nation. I can't wait till I come back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Got us. It is the Savage Nation. We're not talking about politics much because there's not much to talk about when you see four intelligent men, any one of whom would be a better president than what we have in the White House right now. I mean, I'd sleep better at night with any of them, and I'm not a fan of, truthfully, any of them. And you see them letting themselves be manipulated by these low-life jocks like last night on CNN. I mean, what can you say? It's pathetic. It wasn't a debate. A debate would be Obama standing on the stage answering their questions. That would be a debate. A debate? That's a debate. This is not a debate. This is suicide by debate. And then we read today that he goes on Spanish radio and tells him how much he's done for Latinos, the new sacred group in America. Doesn't matter, legal, illegal. Where is the regular American supposed to turn when you have a party of Democrats that appeases it's offensive to me. Do you know that America's per capita government debt is worse than that of Greece? The Senate Budget Committee came out with a chart. It shows that America's per capita government debt is worse than Greece, worse than Ireland, worse than Italy, worse than France, worse than Portugal, worse than Spain. And under Obama's plan, the gross federal debt alone would reach $75,000 per capita in 2022. The man is out of control. The man is like King Ludwig, and nobody will stop this guy. He is an out-of-control egomaniac. U.S. debt is $44,000 per head. In Greece, it's $38,000 per head. And he's giving away money to fake solar companies, illegal aliens. It's unbelievable to me. So that's why I wasn't talking about politics. I was talking about things like reading in the local newspaper, stamp collectors, the Italian club, three girls in the street. It was fun. Not why I don't ride a bicycle off the side of the road here in Florida, because they're like the moon people. They sit under the wheel. They're so short and so old that they have to drive by celestial navigation, except during the day there's no stars to guide them. They can't see over the wheel, which is a very funny line, by the way. Made it up on the spot. One of my favorite. I should put it right into the next novel. Sometimes I find a great line and I have to put it into a book. I don't know. Comes out of my head. To entertain myself, to keep from going into total despair, because then I'd have to go to a self-help group for people with anxiety and depression. This way I get it out of my system. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and start to laugh. Rarely. Not much anymore. I used to laugh more in the middle of the night. It's great to have a sense of humor. It's like being in solitary confinement. You know, it's like you're laughing at your own jokes. That's like solitary, right? What are you laughing at in the middle of the night? The dog looks at me like, go to sleep, man. Look, you guys sleep in two shifts, okay? But dogs don't. You guys may have slept in two shifts historically. I don't care what. I could see the dog looking at me like I'm crazy for getting up in the middle of the night. They sleep a whole night through. They don't know about diurnal or schmernal. They go to sleep. They're out for the night unless someone knocks you and makes a noise or something. I was reading that there's million-dollar foreclosures out there. Big ones, not million. Multi-million-dollar foreclosures. Even these mega mansions in some of America's wealthiest neighborhoods are not immune to the housing crisis. Located in the Gold Coast, here's a house for $18 million. Located in the Gold Coast of Orange County, the present home with the views of Catalina Island, fell into foreclosure in 2010, the same year it was built. At one time, it was in escrow for $28 million. Now the home is available through a private investment group for $18 million. It has never been occupied. The house has an oversized master suite and three additional bedrooms, 6.5 bathrooms, and a garage that accommodates 20 cars. Well, you need a 20-car garage. The average person needs a 20-car. The kitchen is outfitted with high-end stainless steel appliances, blah, 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 and a butler's pantry, blah, blah, blah. There's also a screening room. Every house has a screening room. They get like a broken couch and an atrium foyer. Elsewhere on the 11-acre property are an infinity-edge pool, spa gardens, and a fire pit. A home of this size and a parcel of land over 11 acres in this area is unheard of, noted the listing broker Richard Leavitt. It could never be built again. Well, Mr. Leavitt, I think you're going to have to leave it, because for $18 million in Laguna Beach, I don't think so. Looks very insecure to me. I like looking at like stories like this. Very interesting to me. Here's another one. Gorgeous. I'm putting up on my website, Michaelson. Asking price $7.9 million. The sprawling estate is a throwback to the Gilded Age, just with all new appliances. Originally built in it's a stone house built in 1891. The estate was foreclosed on last year and then renovated by one of its lien holders. It was listed last summer for $7.9 million and remains on the market. 7 acres of manicured lawn. That's terrific. Just what you want, a manicured lawn. You know how many gardeners you need to keep that thing going? Allergies? Say allergies, anyone. I would never live in Newport, Rhode Island. It's like my least favorite place on earth. And people have like weddings in Newport. They live in have horrible lives. And then they have to have a wedding. Why would, if you have a terrible life and you're poor, would you want a wedding in Newport, Rhode Island? Does someone confuse you with a Rockefeller or an Astor? You mean while you're there, you think you're like a queen for a day? Is that what it's about? I was never into that. Here's another one. What's this? Atlanta, Georgia. We'll skip right over that one. I won't say why, but I'm just going to go past that. I'm not interested. It's too humid. I think of Sherman and the forced march. I can't go there. Minnesota. $6.5 million in Minnesota? There are houses over $6 million in Minnesota? On Lake Minnetonka. It always reminds me of like a break-in. When I see a lake like this, a house like this on a lake, I think of like crazy people breaking in and tying you up and killing you. I would never live there. Never. Insecure. I'm giving you like a pastiche in my brain if you want to know how I think. Here. La Jolla, California. Most Americans, if you wrote L-A, one word, L-A and then J-O-L-L, they'd say La Jolla. I did originally when I came to California. I said La Jolla, California. It's very hard to do Anglo-Spanish. It's La Jolla. I didn't know. I had a friend who went there. He disappeared from my life for a while. He sent a letter from La Jolla. So I called him up when I got his number. I said, what are you doing in La Jolla? He said, no, it's La Jolla. How could you pronounce a thing like that? With it, like a tilde. Everything's like with a tilde in it down there. La Jolla, California. Oh, it's awful. Like Macadora columns. Asking price 5.9. After languishing on the market for several years at an asking price of more than $7 million, now it's listed for 5.9. Okay, foreclosure. 3,700 square foot master suite? Wow, too big for me. I like small bedrooms. Do you like extra large bedrooms? I can't sleep in a very large room. It's very interesting because I grew up like in an apartment where there were five people sleeping in a bedroom. I can't sleep in an overly large room. I feel like I'm in a ballroom and having a nightmare. You wake up in the middle of the night, it's like agoraphobia in your bedroom. Well, some people can do it. They grow up different. Unbelievable. So don't think that this is not going up the food chain. It is. I mean, you think only the people with less. This should make you feel better that you know that richer people than you are losing their houses. It should give you some, you should be able to sleep. Here, Palm Desert, California, asking price 3.5. Terrible place. Why would anyone ever want to live in Palm Desert? They think they're Frank Sinatra if they get out. Why would they go to a place like that? Even the dates don't want to be there. They can't wait to be picked. Come on, man. Laugh out there. Someone laugh. This is a live performance on the Savage Nation with no audience. I'm sitting in a room with shorts in Florida looking at these things, and some of these lines are good. No, but truly, I would never ever want to live in Palm Desert. Even the dates can't wait to be packaged and sent out of that place. Come on. Henny Youngman, if he did a shot like that years ago, people would have screamed. If I did this in Vegas, it would be very good. The last of his home in the gated Bighorn Golf Club community sold in 07. It went for $6 million. Now it can have for $250. Oh, no. It's been on and off the market for the pair. It was recently relisted for $3.5 million. The Palm Springs home boasts five-bedroom suites, including a master with it. You know what I hate the new word? Oh, wait, what's the new word they're using? Like a little house now. The littlest house, even an apartment, the great room. My day was a living room. Now it's a great room. What's so great about it? It's 6x8. Let's go into the great room now. You crash right into the outer wall. Everyone has a chef's kitchen. Wow, look at that. It has a refrigerator with a view of the putting green. How exciting can life get, man? You can sit there and eat French bread and drink wine and look at the putting green. Wow. Oh, I can't wait to buy that house and act like Frank Sinatra with nobody home. That's a suicide house. That they find the guy at 65 floating in the pool. The wife doesn't even know he's dead. She went to get her hair done. She comes back. Honey, I'm home. He's like been dead for about 7 hours in the bottom of the pool. Then she don't even know it. She goes out again. She don't even know that he's in the pool and he's dead. She goes out for the evening somewhere, like with her friends, I would imagine. She comes home. They don't even sleep in the same bedroom. They have like a master and another master. In the morning, she looks for the old guy. She hates him at this point. And then finally, the pool man comes and says, Senora, we found your husband floating in the pool. Cherry Hills Village, Colorado. Now, I have no affinity for the Colorado area. There's something wrong with that area. Pardon me, I don't mean to, you know, like many people I understand live there. I could never live in Colorado. Something about the mountains. Where's this one? Cherry Hills Village, Colorado. I don't know what people see in Colorado. Dick Cheney's in Wyoming. Okay, so it's nearby to a conservative. Maybe that's why they moved to Colorado. What in the world would you live in Colorado for if you have money? Why? Okay, if you have family, let's say, or you're in a business, I could see staying there. You have roots in Colorado. There must be something about it, like the high mountains. Okay, let's take a caller or two. I've had a lot of... You want me to play, like, sound and do... Hey, look at Montero Ranch, an exclusive gated community with a private golf course. Another one you're going to look at a putting green? Another putting green. Oh, Chef's Kitchen. You want a chef's kitchen? Jeff, you want a chef's kitchen? Game room, wine cellar, and a library with high-end details like limestone floors and vaulted ceilings. So what do you do when you get depressed? You walk around and say, wow, look at that. I have limestone floors, or I shouldn't be depressed because my ceilings are vaulted. You know, at this point, I'd rather live in a second-floor apartment in Queens looking down on a busy street where I see life going by. You can go out of your mind in these houses. Okay, let's take some callers. Brian in Portland, Oregon, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. Hey, I appreciate your humor. You keep me going. I don't think I could do it without you. I think you're about the only sane person I know anymore.
Well, you see why I'm getting into this sardonic mood is because I'm so depressed by the so-called debates. I'm so depressed that Obama's allowed to get away with what he's getting away with without a word of it uttered by one Republican ever that I have to go into the humor.
Oh, I hear you. I'm the same way.
Well, as long as you enjoy, then you keep listening. That's the main thing. Have you bought all of my sponsors' products? Have you bought gold, cough drops, flowers, pajamas, cars, whatever they're telling you to buy, you better buy them or else I won't be here. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What I love about these houses is you look in them and they have like these monster kitchens, four kitchens plus one outdoors, and yet they don't cook in these houses. Like, the house is $18 million. The kitchen must have cost a buck and a half, the kitchen alone with the appliances, and there's no cooking. I keep saying, I grew up in like an attached house in Queens, 20 feet wide. There was one four-burner stove that ran off, I think, gas or electric. My mother had like 18 dishes going at once. But you go into these houses, no one can cook. It's unbelievable to me. Multi-million dollar foreclosures is what we're talking about. And this one is in Palm Desert, California. And it's eerie. It's eerie. As I say, even the dates can't wait to be packaged and sent out of there. No, because I know like people go to Palm Desert, they think that they're Frank Sinatra or Dean Martin. They're going to have like a great time, but... Hey, I have a question for my audience. I have the guys who are laughing hysterically at some of my lines. I'm in a great mood tonight. You can see I'm in such a black mood with my back to a wall that Neil, my new board op, my other board op went somewhere. My new board op, Neil, who has a good sense of humor. Beowulf, my producer's laughing. Doug doesn't laugh. It's not in his genes. But they're laughing hysterically. I'm saying, you know what? What would be wrong if you ran the laughter when you really laugh? Because then the audience would think it's like canned laughter. But if it was canned laughter, I wouldn't say run it. But if you're genuinely laughing at some of the things I'm doing, it actually boosts me because I don't have a live audience. You follow what I'm saying? I want to hear from my audience. Should I let the laughter out if I'm doing humor or not? Would you find it interfering or would you actually enjoy it? I'm interested in that. It's like an experimental question. Let's go to the callers. Jerry in Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, your next career could be as a comedian because you're utterly hilarious.
Well, that would be great. That's what a way to work my way down the ladder of success. Let's see, after a Ph.D. and master's degrees and 28 books and 18 years in radio, I'll go as a startup comedian in a comedy club. What a way to begin. What a way to begin my senior years. I can't wait to do that one. Thank you. Louise in Pittsburgh, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Louise?
Well, please let the humor out because I can hardly talk from laughing.
Oh, thank God there's a woman who can laugh. I have 9 women listeners in my audience of 9 million, and only one of them can laugh, and that's you.
No, more than that can laugh. But I want to have a question.
Uh-oh.
Since when does a good debater mean he's going to be a good president?
Since when do you call suicide by argument a debate? A debate is one party getting to debate with the party in power instead of letting them have a barbecue in the White House or a blues festival.
Right.
Thank you for the call. That's all. So what would you like me to do? Anything? Humor? Non-humor? Pittsburgh, Janice, the women can laugh. Janice, what's on your mind?
Please, more humor. I'm amazed. You actually do have a marvelous gift. You're more than a brilliant intellectual. You're a great comedian. I have never laughed so hard in my life as I am tonight.
That's so good to hear. Now, what was it, the line about the husband dead in the pool? Which one got you?
I laughed so hard at that one, I could just...
It just shows you where you're at. Are you married?
I want to hear you laugh, too, because...
No, but Janice, are you married to a gentleman who swims in the pool while you're out getting your hair done?
Oh, my God. I think I know those people. But anyway, I think you should laugh, too. I love your laughter.
You know, people do like when I laugh because it's genuine. I don't laugh enough. I do have a decent sense of humor. But lately, I'm so depressed and agitated seeing what these lowlifes in the media are able to do to these Republican candidates. I'm agitated because I wouldn't take it. I would have wiped the floor with John King last night. I would have shut his pie hole in 2 seconds. I would have said, shut up. You're nothing but a fallen jock. Here's what I'm going to talk about. Obama abandoning Israel. Obama wrecking the economy. Obama running the country wild with illegal aliens. Obama putting Border Patrol agents in jail. Obama killing our Marines and getting away with it or letting them die and not having an investigation. We're not talking about your set of questions, John. So just take a walk.
Savage.
Well, Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I don't know, you know, what you want to do here. I can't take the news anymore. You got Muslims rioting. Then you got Afghani soldiers shooting our men in the back. And our president apologizes to the warlord Karzai for a couple of books that were burned from a jail cell. Astounding. Here's some stories that I didn't get to yet. 35,000 postal service jobs on the chopping block. You say, oh, great. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say about that. You know, schleppy job. My uncle was a postman. Poor people. It was considered a great job being a postman. It really was. I mean, the government work. Are you kidding? He worked for like a year and then got a heart attack and he was lived on for 35 years. It was a terrific job. Now, he was a veteran from World War II. He gave his service to the country. He worked about a year for the post office, then got a heart attack. And for 40 years, the government supported him. Terrific job. Procter & Gamble cutting 5,700 jobs. Whew, wow. How do they fire 5,700 jobs? Procter & Gamble? What do they make? They make like soap? What do they make? Procter & Gamble announced plans Thursday to cut 5,700 positions globally. That means in America. When they say globally, it means they're going to screw the American people and move to China. Oh, boy. Whew. The household goods giant estimates these layoffs will save $800 million. So that means the new crook that they put in to run it is throwing the workers into the gutter so he can take the money out the back door and run away. They can care less what it does for the company. How does that consist of making a company healthy or firing people? Can you figure this one out? Procter & Gamble's brands include Tidecrest, Charmin, and Gillette. The company announced a deal last week to sell its Pringles potato chip unit to Kellogg. Who would eat a Pringle? I remember when it came out even like a Pringle. You know what I'm saying? I liked potato chips as a kid. I didn't know any better. Leads to high blood pressure, greasy fingers, and halitosis. But when they came up with the Pringle, I remember there was a discussion about it in my group. Who could eat a perfectly round something with perfect crinkles in it? I never went near a Pringle after that. Do they advertise on my show? I'll be dead if they do. I'm finished if they're one of my I don't think so. Could be. You never know. What else is out there? Remarkable hiring stories, cars, Lynn files to trademark. Who is this guy, Lynn? Nick star Jeremy Lynn. Looks to control sale of clothing, mugs, other items with trademark term Linsanity. See, that's the country we live in. Got an idiot who could throw a basketball already. He's more popular than the president. That's the nation I live in. You wonder why things happen the way they do. I don't even know who the guy is. Everywhere I turn, there's a guy named Lynn, who's a basketball star. Control sale of clothing. I thought of creating a line around my name. People said, you know, the disc jockeys are creating lines of things around. Just people who play records in L.A. are making a fortune just by selling clothing, mugs, and other items that are trademarked with their name. So then I thought about trademarking my name, which I've already done years ago, and selling things. What am I going to sell? Like Savage shorts? I mean, a Savage garlic chopper? What could I possibly? George Foreman's grill. That was a big thing, right? So what would I make? Like a Savage dog leash? That would be a big hit. I don't understand the products world. There's a fortune in. Why would anybody want a dog leash with my name on it? I mean, what would that give them pride? Oh, yeah, it's a Savage leash. I don't understand that. Marketing, I don't understand, truthfully. I don't even – certain things about American culture I'm bewildered by. I'm bewildered. Like, missed me. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. The website you have to look at is michaelsavage.com. You got to order my book, Trickle Down Tyranny, now off Amazon or one of the other sites. And then I can get back to telling jokes. And buy the gold and the pajamas and the flowers and the cough drops and everything else. They pay for the show. You don't realize. You think that this costs nothing. It's a big operation, radio. It's the advertisers who make the whole show. Believe it or not, they have faith in me. I got to tell you the truth. They got a lot of guts with liberals controlling everything. Ah, you can't advertise on his show. Why? Well, he loves America. Therefore, you got to boycott him. Now, you got to support shows that hate America, hate the family, hate the church, hate God, hate the country, hate the soldiers, hate the police, and hate your mother. That's the kind of show you want to support. You want to support MSNBC or CNN. That's where you should put the big money if you're Procter & Gamble. All right, let's take the callers. Maureen, Pittsburgh, you're up. What's on your mind?
I want to hear you laughing, sir, please. There is not enough laughter these days. In fact,
so could I just go on the air for 3 hours and not even talk, just laugh?
No, you have to have some substance with which we can laugh.
Well, that's the problem. There's the challenge right there, isn't it?
Well, there's not a whole
See, I got you to laugh at least. Got you to laugh a little bit. I'll try my best, but some days I'm in such a dark mood. It's like the black dog takes over me. You know what I mean? I can't climb out of it because the news is so horrible. And the people seem to be so stupid in the country. How Obama gets away with what he gets away with bewilders me. I can name four things he has done that are impeachable. Not a word during a debate. How about asking one question to the candidates? If you could impeach the president for something that he's done, what would it be? Mr. Romney, you're first. How come they don't ask the question of themselves when the moron asks them a stupid question like this? Here's the stupidest question of the night. This is the CNN setup guy, the fallen jock. You know, the kind of guy who was like a jock in high school and then became nothing, so he had to go into journalism. This is what passes for journalism. This question to you, Governor Romney, on the issue of Israel and Iran and Mr. Obama, where do you stand on contraceptives? That's what we were hearing last night. And they answered the man like in a schizophrenic answer. 1-800-449-8255. Freddie in Virginia Beach, what's on your mind, Freddie?
Well, Doc Savage, I really enjoy the humor. You know, we need it. I can't take the news anymore like you. I tune it out. It's such...
No, I know it. I have to go on the intuition with the show, which is if I get up here and I'm going to just do Romney, Obama, Gingrich, and the other guy who lacks the neurons that everyone seems to love, you're not going to listen to it for very long because you can get that, I think, all day long somewhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I listen to the golfer when I'm working because here on the East Coast, he comes on at 12 o'clock. But after that, I'm done with that, and I'm listening to the regular
radio. I understand. No, it's a different time of day. It's a different mood. It's a different thing already. On the East Coast, it's dark. I got the security lights on. I'm looking like at the lawns, like the 16 screens. If I see movement, I blink in my studio. You know, like I want to press the alarm button. But it turns out it was a moth flying through the camera. The security cameras are very weird. I mean, what good are they? Oh, yeah, well, they get the picture of the guy who came to your house to kill you. And after you're dead, they have it on the tape in the black. That's great. No, the security cameras have a use to them. There's no question about it. You get a chance to load the gun and go in the safe room. Instead of the great room, they have the safe room. That's going to be the new bill. Every house is going to have a safe room now. I wish I had a safe room when I was a kid to get away from my father. My God, that would have been great. Every kid should have a safe room to get away from his parents. You talk about bullying. You want to go back to bullying. All of child rearing in my day was bullying. No, think about it. Guys, am I wrong? My entire upbringing was based upon bullying. All of the upbringing I had was bullying. You'll never amount to anything. You're no good. Whatever I tried to do, I was no good. So one day I wanted to play the drums. I'll never forget as long as I live. I tried the flute. He called me. I don't want to tell you. He caught me playing the flute in the basement. I don't have to tell you what he did to me and the flute, but... That was the end of my wind instruments career. So then I figured I'd pick up something more masculine. I won't play the flute in the basement. I was infatuated at the time with Cuban music, and I loved the wooden flute, the flout, the Cuban flute. Jose Fajardo. So I bought a flute. Kids in a basement. He came down. He thought like I, you know, and he figured I thought of what I was. Oh, are you playing a flute? So all right, that was over with. I was so embarrassed. So. Like months later, I said, all right, I'll impress my father. Since he doesn't want me to play the flute, I'll play the drums. I have a good sense of rhythm. So I start playing the drums. He listens like with the ear. Well, you can't even keep a beat. That was the end of my drumming career. So thank God. I mean, by the time I went into radio, he was already, you know, with God, hectoring God over there. I hope he's enjoying himself. But so I'm saying all of child rearing in our country in my day was based upon bullying. So every kid needs a safe room when I think about it. Is that such an absurd statement? It really isn't. The libs would agree with me. In fact, the libs would say that parents shouldn't raise children. They should be raised by the state. I mean, that's the communist way, isn't it? State-run homes for children. Isn't that what they want? No parents? Where they can indoctrinate the child from cradle to grave, right? Like in Brave New World. They can just even put chemicals into the uterus so that the child comes out as an alpha, beta, gamma, or delta. If you read, well, I'm already way past, can't even read that. Judge tosses out Honeyman murder case. An Alabama judge dismissed the murder case against the man accused in the scuba diving death of his newlywed wife in Australia, a judicial official said. I wasn't following that one. I was more interested in the seven Marines killed in another copter collision because of the lack of parts and maybe they were short of parts and, you know, replacement parts. They needed the money to study diversity training in the military and how to convert missile silos into women's showers. Obama apologizes for Quran burning but doesn't demand an apology from the warlord Karzai for an Afghani who shot our men's in the back. You hear this? Senator Rubio was once a Mormon. See, now every day is Mormon. Mormon this, Mormon that, Mormon this, Mormon. Like, Mormon's a dirty word. To me, communist is a dirty word, not Mormon. Senator Marco Rubio's religious journey, Catholic to Mormon, to Catholic to Baptist and Catholic. What is this now? I don't understand this. Where did this come from? They never talked about Hussein Obama's religion. And now all of a sudden, all they're covering is the religion of every Republican who has any chance of replacing the man in the White House in any way. And religion was verboten to the media when he came up. Muslim father, Muslim name, but hey, you can't talk about that. Oh, no, that's a no-no. Now, all of a sudden, he was a Mormon, a Cuban-American. How did he become a Mormon? I don't understand that. I'm not mocking anything. Was a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as a young boy. I like Mormons. I've always met Mormons. I've always gotten along with them. I was in the islands when I was younger doing field work, like, you know, in Fiji. There's a lot of religious people down there. They were missionaries. They were the nicest people I ever met. They're very good people. There's no joke in that. But to the atheist communists, anyone who is religious is suspect. I know a Jewish woman who became a Mormon. I said, don't worry about it. That means you're a more Jew. So she laughed. I said, oh, you can tell your friends in the Mormon church now you're a Jew more. is that a bit? There's nothing. She laughed at it. She said the Mormons like the joke. I don't understand the conversion thing to begin with. You are what you're born. Isn't that true? Fundamentally, how can you convert? Aren't you what you were born at the end of the day? I mean, I suppose you are and you aren't, but you think you've converted. But at the end of the day, you really are what you were born in, what family you're born into, I think. I'm suspecting that you are. But a lot of people do the conversion. A lot of marriages between different religions. And for the sake of the children, they have to, you know, like pick one religion, which is actually sane for the children. You cannot raise a child. Yeah, well, they're bi-religious. It's impossible. A child doesn't understand that. You have to pick one. That's a very big thing in marriage. You have to decide who's going to, like, which religion. That must be a big topic we've never covered. Like, if you have a father who's a blank and a mother who's a blank, which religion should they follow? The answer is whichever one is more committed to their religion is the one you should follow. Because today there's almost no commitment to religion anyway, so that's the way I would see it. That's all. That's if the kid even follows it. They usually follow it up into the point of baptism or the bar mitzvah. Then after that, they go to Hollywood and get gel in their hair, and that's the end of the story. After the hair gel, it's the end of the whole religion. The Bible's never seen again. Senator Marco Rubio's religious journey. Is it now smearing him now? This is CNN. Catholic to Mormon to Catholic to Baptist and Catholic. I'll take that over Muslim to Christian to Muslim and back again. I mean, take that one. 1-800-449-825. What's this? New listener, Courtney. Courtney. I like the name Courtney. Virginia Beach. Courtney, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Courtney?
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm a new listener, and I'm 21 years old, and I just love your program because it's so diverse, and it's really opened me up.
You're 21, and you listen to Michael Savage, a conservative right-wing talk show host. You better not let anyone in your family know.
I let everyone know, and I tell them to listen to you because you're very inspiring, and I really commend you for standing up for our troops, and it just amazes me.
I mean, that's a heartbreaker. We have two airmen shot in the back by Afghanis, and our president doesn't demand an apology from the warlord Karzai. Instead, he apologizes to Karzai because some books from jail cells, which included Qurans with notes in them, were burned. You hear this? This is what we're living with. And that wasn't a topic last night during the so-called debate. You hear?
It's
now, why do you think I'm doing humor? Because my back is to a wall with the insanity out there. I can't take it anymore. I can't take it anymore. How they subject themselves to these liberal psychotics on CNN. Why would they do it? Here again on the religious page of CNN, Jeremy Lin, new kind of Christian. Even him they're bringing up. Maybe they could smear him that he's a good basketball player, but he's a Christian, so therefore he's not a good basketball player. Is that what they're going to imply? That if he was an atheist, he'd be even a better basketball player? That's amazing to me. That is amazing how degenerate these atheists will go. Here's the next panel. in the belief blog, what people talk about before they die. Oh, let's not go there. Is the Catholic vote a myth, they're asking, you hear? You're going to get an honest answer from CNN on that one. I guarantee you're going to get a real honest answer on that. No, sir, it is not a myth. There is a Catholic vote. Unfortunately, they were hoodwinked into thinking that Hussein Obama was their friend. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Let's go to the callers immediately. I got people who've been holding a long, long time. Let's go to my favorite state in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, since there's only one. It's my favorite. Marco in Hawaii, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Aloha, infidel.
Let me do that. Wait, let me do that correctly. Hello, infidels.
There we go. I have to ask you, you were talking about these three women you saw talking about, I'm pretty, she pulled up your dress, blah, blah, blah. What happened to iSavage? Where are the camera pictures?
I should have just clicked that little scene and put it onto my website, huh?
You sound like a street photographer. You know, you're taking.
Well, you know, I have a site on my website, michaelsavage.com. I have a section called Savage's Eye Camera, but I haven't taken pictures on it for over 2 years. I had forgotten I had it. But with the iPhone, I could do it. I mean, walking the streets, I do see things and hear things that I guess many people see and hear, but I pay attention to them. Some of them are funny.
You could get a Leica. You could be, you know, a real photographer and get a little beret and walk around and take pictures.
Now you're pulling my leg. No, I really do like the idea of a Leica. Is that still the best camera?
Well, they've made so many different models now. You know, the Leica is the most expensive. It's the doctor's camera. But they have, you know, Sony makes some really good cameras that are, you know, just as good. Panasonic. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them that are.
Canon makes. You're talking about a single frame camera or the iPhone still?
No, the single frame.
I was told the Canon is the best for daily use. I mean, let's say for an average guy, the Canon is at the top of the heap.
Yes, I mean, they go.
I don't know really. I haven't kept up with it. I used to be a Nikon man. I used to use the Nikon. God, remember the days of the manual focus. I love the click of the Nikon F1. Remember that one?
The developing the film was the greatest part.
Wow. Oh, so you're a photographer. I still have my old Nikon Fs from 1969, 70 when I used them in the islands. I used to take Kodachrome slides. I still have those slides. They're astounding. I think they're going to be worth a lot to somebody because they're so deep with detail in the Fiji Islands when I was there doing my folk work, you know, like the anthropology stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, they're beautiful. Yeah, one day I'll get back to that. So what else do you want to talk about? I mean, we're almost out of time this hour. West Virginia, Matt, fire away. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
I have a question for you. Why don't you make that Michael Savage dog leash and call it the Teddy Savage Signature Series?
That's very funny. Well, you mean want a Savage leash, huh?
Oh, I tell you, I'd buy one in a minute. I got a Jack Russell Terrier. He'd probably break it in half about 2 days.
Oh, yeah, he chews right through it. So you're another guy with a little dog, right? Everyone, a lot of guys, I once observed this like a year or two ago because I have a little dog. A lot of men are buying little dogs because there's no love left in the world and there's no kindness, and they find it in a little dog. They can use their paternal feelings for a dog because nobody else wants it.
Well, they poop little turds. That's what I like about it.
No! Well, sure, I saw a Great Dane in the streets last night. Everyone says, wow, what a great dog. I said, hello. You know, even the New York Times bag wouldn't be big enough. That's the most disgusting thing in the world. I can't look at people swinging those blue bags around. There's something crazy about America. I got to admit it. I mean, if I were from another country and I came in and saw women in nice outfits with a bag full of dog droppings, how does that look to you?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Why have you criticized the money that went to Governor Romney for security at the Olympics? Why was that a bad earmark?
Governor Romney asked for that earmark. That's really the point here. He's out there on television ads right now, unfortunately attacking me for saying that I'm this great earmarker when he not only asked for earmarks for the Salt Lake Olympics, and he did as the governor of Massachusetts, $300 or $400 million.
You come to Congress and you say, these are the things we need. But while I was fighting to save the Olympics, you were fighting to save the bridge to nowhere.
All of you need to think about this, because this is one of those easy demagogic fights that gets you in a lot of trouble. I helped the Atlanta Olympics. I think it was totally appropriate for you to ask for what you got. I just think it's kind of silly for you to then turn around and run an ad attacking somebody else for getting what you got.
Here are the questions for the Savage Nation. It was sad last night watching the debate. You had whiny Newt, sing-songy Paul, shifty Santorum, and apologetic Mitt. Who do you think the debates have harmed the most other than the Republican Party? Topic two, the man who shouted Allah Akbar in a plane out of Portland had led police on a 20-minute car chase earlier in the week and then was arrested for drunk driving and posted bail. Are you surprised that he was released so easily? I'm not. It was in Portland. Topic number three, French companies are beginning to produce wine in China. In New York State, some teachers in Buffalo have plastic surgery as a free medical benefit. What's the most over-the-top benefit you've personally seen given to a public sector worker? Topic number five, and very sad, seven more soldiers were killed in yet another helicopter crash, this time at a training base in Arizona. Why do you think there are so many helicopter crashes in the military under Obama? Are these just coincidental? Or maybe should we say there's something more sinister at work? What is this? What is this? On MichaelSavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, borders, language, culture, top right. The passenger who disrupted the Houston flight from Portland was a Saudi. He sang about Bin Laden and his hatred for women. Obama apologizes and the throwbacks killed two U.S. servicemen in Afghanistan. Obama got on his hands and knees, begging warlord Karzai to forgive him. Again, I want to remind you, coming soon, April 3rd, Trickle Down Tyranny. Pre-order your copy now on Amazon and other sites. Well, there it is again, the communist Alinsky. He's back from the grave. Obama just gave one of his surrogate groups $56 million in a federal loan to create a new insurance plan. Life is good when you're king. It's also good when you're czar. Muslims plan parallel parliament in Switzerland. A growing immigrant population determined to avoid assimilation into Switzerland is creating a parallel parliament in Switzerland. You like that? In London, a baggage handler groomed to be a terrorist claims he was sacked for being a Muslim. Heh. Iranian scientist sought Israel's annihilation, says his widow. LAPD police chief Mr. Quisling backs licenses, driver's licenses for illegal aliens. He's supposed to uphold the law. Instead, he's supporting the breaking of the law. Military helicopters collide in California, killing seven. Oh, my goodness. AP pressers attack NYPD for monitoring Muslim students on websites. Iran court convicts Christian pastor convert to death. Religion of peace. Religious broadcasters urge IRS review of media matters. Good luck. Obama said when Congress refuses to act, Joe and I are going to act. After all, it is a dictatorship run by the Democrats, isn't it? Democrats move to buy newspapers in a swing state. The sale of Philadelphia's two dailies raises bias concerns. Ha, 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 ha. Did you see my article that the founders envisioned a petty dictator like Obama? It's still up on my website. Did you see my USA Today column honoring the U.S. Marines? It's still up on MichaelSavage.com. Have you signed up for a free Savage Nation newsletter? It's on MichaelSavage.com. Did you know that Germany rejects a demand to stop castrating sex criminals? It's on MichaelSavage.com. Did you know that California is the most hated state in America, according to a new survey? That's right, according to MichaelSavage.com. South Africa is addicted to corruption. No, really. French wine company to produce reds in China. Very appropriate. Red wine in China. Will they permit white wine? We don't know. But with the toxicants that they use in the foods, I wouldn't touch it. Federal raids are a serious blow to the rhino trade. Well, I'm glad they're doing something to protect animals. That's nice. I miss Teddy. He's not with me on this trip. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's see what else is in the news, if anything. Oil hits $108 a barrel. Obama says, I've got another 5 years coming up. How would he know that? Limbaugh is now backing Newt Gingrich. Doesn't surprise me. Always was a water carrier for the wrong side. America's per capita government debt is worse than Greece. I told you that, didn't I? Remember I told you that? Didn't I tell you that? More debt per capita in America. America's per capita government debt is worse than Greece. The office of Senator Jeff Sessions, ranking member of the Senate Budget Committee, something Obama never heard of, a budget, sends along a chart showing that America's per capita government debt is worse than Greece, as well as Ireland, Italy, France, Portugal, and Spain. See, in Greece, each citizen owes $38,000. Under President Obama, we owe $44,000 per citizen. Under Obama's plan, gross federal debt alone would reach $75,000 per capita in 2022. Support Obama and welcome Sharia law. This is nightmarish. Read the chart. I didn't make it up. Numbers don't lie. Only Democrats do. 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation.
Well, first of all, Fielding, my presidency is not over. I've got another 5 years coming up. We're going to get this done. And absolutely we have strong support in the Latino community because they've seen what we've been working on. First of all, strengthening the economy. We just were able to get the payroll tax cut done. That provides 25 million Latinos with an extra $40 in every paycheck and is going to help strengthen the economy. We made sure that unemployment insurance got extended because the Latino community has been so hard hit. 1 million Latinos are going to be benefiting from that. The housing settlement that we just passed, which will help Latino families all across the country who were taken advantage of by subprime lenders to be able to stay in their homes.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers Softish Throat Drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat, that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better? Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com.
Savage.
Now, somebody once said living well is the best revenge. Now, what living well means is up to you. To me, it's a few people I can talk to and have a meal with, which is very rare in this world. So last night, I got to tell you, as I told you I would, a man in the street story. I go up to North Beach Restaurant. Lorenzo had been away for 10 days. And I brought Teddy in. Teddy likes to dine on Italian food. And I go up there and I said, look, I don't want any fish. I don't want any pasta. I want meat tonight. So he says, why don't you have scotodito? I said, what's scotodito? I don't speak Italian. He says, scotodito, it means you'll burn your finger. I said, what? I don't want to burn my finger. He said, no. Scotodito means lamb chops. That's how we used to say it in Italy. He said, scotodito. So I said, okay, then give me some hot lamb chops. So I ate these greatest lamb chops. Teddy scoffed down some veal at Lorenzo. Lorenzo just lost one of his dogs, and he was heartbroken, so he likes Teddy more than ever. And he gave him some veal. And we had a nice time. And I'm leading up to some wine here, some wine story. I bring in a bottle of my own because I had been drinking earlier the night before New Zealand wine. I happen to like wine. When I drink wine at all, I like New Zealand from Marlborough, the Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough in New Zealand, right? And it's a little bit of an affront to Lorenzo because he has his own, you know, vineyard. I understand that, but it's all right. He's a big guy. So he drank the wine, and he said to me, the first thing that you smell when you drink it, well, I don't know, you want to hear more about wine? Because his grandfather taught him in Italy how to taste wine when he was 6 years old. Here's what his grandfather said. He said, Lorenzo, you take a small sip of wine. You put it on your tongue. Don't move anything. Count to eight and let it go down from the side of your mouth into your throat. And then he said, as a young kid, he choked almost to death from it. He said, when he did it, though, I experienced it because the side of your mouth is the most delicate part of your throat. I experienced something incredible. Something incredible because it goes all the way into your throat and the side of your mouth. My grandfather used to say, you know when you do that, it takes the pants off the wine and you really see what is there. I love the florid language of old Italy. So I'm going to give you a little more of the florid language of old Italy. You ready for more? Here's some more. They had a lot of troubles in Italy after the war. So he says his grandfather told him when he was a little boy in Italy, when they had nothing but trouble because the Nazis had occupied Italy, by the way, his grandfather said to him, everyone has a cross to bear, but lucky is the one that can keep the cross in his pocket. That struck me as such a brilliant statement to remember. I love that one, so I made a note of it. And then we talked about olive oil and this and that. I'm not going to bore you with that, but here's the end of the story because it was very funny. I ate the meal. Teddy had his meal. We had a lot of fun talking. I drank some wine. I go outside. It turned very cold. It was like 50 degrees, 51 degrees. The wind was blowing, which I love. I had my overcoat and hat on. And just guys, you know, BSing in the street waiting to get back in the car. Incidentally, someone drives me when I drink. You just should know that in case you want to send a letter to somebody. And then a man comes around the corner, an Iranian man. He's a Persian. He owns a Persian restaurant around the corner. I've seen the restaurant for 30 years. I've not gone in it. It's always been known as a upscale, you know, Persian restaurant. But I never went in it. So he says to me, did I tell you a story? He says, I know who you are. He says, you're a legend in this city. And he says to me, I said, thank you very much. I said, well, your restaurant is a legend. We exchange pleasantries. So he said to me, did I ever tell you? Now, remember, he's a Muslim. So he says to me, did I ever tell you the story that when the Jews don't eat, the Muslims starve to death? Well, we all broke into phenomenal laughter. I said, that's the funniest thing I ever heard. He was, of course, referring to the days of the Jewish holidays when Jewish people generally don't go to restaurants. So here is a Muslim guy who owns a Persian restaurant. He says, we have a saying in the restaurant business that when the Jews don't eat, the Muslims starve to death. I said, I got to say that on the radio tomorrow. He says, no. He says, you can't say it because you're not Muslim. He says, people will take offense. He says, let me say it. I can't imagine a Muslim would take offense at something that's funny. I mean, it's a good-natured joke, isn't it? Or did that offend somebody? Maybe you can call the ACLU because I told you a joke. San Luis Obispo, Robbie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I hear you talk about olive oil. I'm an old retired surgeon who makes olive oil in California, and I know you like Spanish oil, but there are some pretty spectacular California olive oils that are really, really extra virgin.
Oh, I almost drink it. I use the California or extra virgin olive oil because it's about the only certified organic oil that's reliably organic.
Yeah, we really police ourselves. The California Olive Oil Council, we have the highest standards in the world for the certification as extra virgin. And when
I really, believe me, I'm an olive oil fanatic, and I do love, yes, I like Spanish olive oil, but the fact of the matter is there are trees here in California that are not quite 1,000 years old, but they're some phenomenally old trees. And the if they're new trees, they're made from cuttings from Spanish cuttings, weren't they, some of them?
Some of them, yes.
But, yes, and the reason I like Spanish olive oil in general is because it's a lower acid oil. Am I correct in that?
It is, but we make a very unique varietal from Italy that's also very, very low in acidity. And one of these days, I'd love to get you to try it.
Let me ask you something. My friend Lorenzo at North Beach Restaurant has a vineyard. I was there when he cut down the trees and put in his vineyard. So I asked him why his oil is amazing from his vineyard up. You probably are familiar with it, Petroni oil. So I said, well, what are your olive trees from? He said, the cuttings are from Tuscany, and they're a mixture of, listen to this, Lacino, Pendolino, Moraiolo, Coratina, and Frantoio, which he says is the classical Tuscan blend. Does that make sense to you?
Those are
the traditional Tuscans. Almost every Tuscan blend that you'll buy in California are from those trees. More Frantoia, Lucino, Pendolino, either Moraiola or Merino. And there's some folks up in Sonoma that have just, in the early to mid-90s, won best olive oil in Europe.
Can you please tell the listeners, are there still tax advantages for agricultural issues such as olive oil?
There's more glamour than financial success. It's a passion, just like the wine industry. It's a unique product that reflects terroir.
So there's no agricultural write-off for owning an olive ranch?
There are, just like any other delayed production product. You have a period of time where you invest money with no returns, and you are able to write off some of your equipment. Some orchards like ours do not have our own mills, and some do have their own mills, and that's quite a...
But what if I, Michael Savage, were to invest in an olive oil farm? Would I get a tax write-off?
You would get some write-off, but ultimately it would have to be...
Because, Robbie, this is the most highly taxed state in the land, and I'm reaching a point where I may leave it because Governor Brown's proposal to raise taxes on people who are productive. You know that we pay 10.5% to 11% state tax in this state? People don't know what we're living through here. And now we have a radical leftist governor who says he wants to raise taxes by another 5% on those of us who actually work for a living. Who's going to stay here if he does that?
Well, you know, the opportunity to grow olives now exists in both Arizona, Georgia, and Texas. So those are some more.
You can grow olives in Texas? Where?
There's a very large olive grower in Texas, West Texas. He has his own mill. There's an olive grower in Arizona, and there's a new organization of olive growers in Georgia. So
amazing. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You know, we just passed recently, anyway, the 3-year anniversary of the president signing the economic stimulus into law. President Obama did say something that could ring true. He promised real and lasting change for generations to come. What a terrifying reality that could become. You see, today, 13 million people in this nation are without a job. Another 4 million have stopped looking for a job. Former Colorado Congressman Bob Beaupre joins us to look at the financial fray that Obama put us in. Mr. Beaupre, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, great to talk to you again. Always is.
Well, have the candidates focused sufficiently on the economy or not?
Well, we're stuck. This is the stuck on the bottom, unfortunately. This is the longest recession, longest recovery, at least, we've ever had. The deepest recession and the longest recovery ever since the Great Depression. And, you know, although there's some glimmers of hope, some big indicators are out there that tell me we're way premature in talking about recovery. And some of those certainly are the number of jobs that have not come back. There's about 5 million jobs that were lost in this recession that have not been found yet. The total workforce is still about 126,000 smaller than it was when the recession started, and the folks that either have a job or are at least looking for a job, that's measured by something called the labor participation rate. That's the lowest it's been, Michael, since the early 80s, and we all remember what a funk that was. So we've got a very, very long way to go before we can start using the R word, recovery, in my opinion.
Weren't Obama's stimulus plans, cash for clunkers plan, the recovery summer supposed to be the economic salvation of America?
Yeah. That's what we were told, weren't we? They were, and the $787 billion in the stimulus was going to cure all our ills. And if you go back and just hold Barack Obama and the administration to their word, unemployment was supposed to be less than 6% right now. It's 8.3%. And more honestly, if you included the number of people that have simply given up and walked away from the workforce, unemployment's probably 12-15% more realistically. Long-term unemployment is through the roof. There's still 5.5 million people that have been unemployed for more than 27 weeks. I already mentioned that the labor force, it's the smallest percent of the age-eligible population in about 30 years. Household income's down. National debt is up $4.5 trillion. We're going to have four record years in a row of deficits over $1 trillion. I mean, just about any way you slice this, the recovery, if there is one, is nascent, and still, you know, you're looking at the far end of the tunnel for that little glimmer of light. And one of the biggest problems is Barack Obama's policies themselves. Any public opinion poll that's worth its salt has demonstrated the enormous uncertainty and anxiety that exists, and that's why businesses are sitting on cash, consumers are sitting on cash. Everybody's kind of holed up in a bunker, waiting for something that says it's time to come out again.
So after all these efforts and expenses, are there really any new jobs?
Well, they aren't. Business isn't hiring, and there's a great there was a great survey just done by Gallup that proved that. They surveyed 600, I think it was, small business owners. 85% of them said they are not hiring. 85% said they are not hiring. Now, if we were in the middle of a recovery, if we were even the front end of a recovery, you wouldn't see 85% of small business owners saying we're not hiring. And the reason they say they're not hiring was primarily due to their concern about rising health care costs, something Barack Obama said wasn't supposed to happen. With Obamacare, it was supposed to go down. Well, it's not going to go down. All kinds of studies, including the government, says that health care costs are actually going to go up because of Obamacare. And almost one in two of the small business owners say that the plethora of new regulations coming out of this administration is the other primary reason. And they all point to one word, uncertainty again. They're just nervous about what else is to come from this administration. And certainly the president's new budget doesn't give you any reason to hope. Talks about more taxes, more government, let more out of our pockets and more into the pockets and control of government.
Well, what are Obama's own top presidential priorities and how has he failed him?
Well, by his own admission, Barack Obama wanted to get the economy going, wanted to reform health care, and wanted to get us more energy independent. He has failed miserably on all three cases. We've already talked about the economy, and you know, candidly, objectively, it's very hard to find anything that he has done right. In fact, it's just the opposite. There's plenty of evidence of what he has done wrong. Relative to Obamacare, he said it was going to improve access, it was going to reduce cost. You've now got some of his own advisors, Jonathan Gruber, who was famously cited as the MIT economist that the Obama administration pointed to as their supposed independent expert. Well, they paid him $400,000 for his, quote, independent opinion. He's now running around state to state saying, oh, by the way, premiums actually aren't going to go down. They're going to go up. Doctors, if you can find your doctor, maybe you can keep him, but more likely docs are going to be leaving healthcare, and insurance plans have already been closing down, so you're not going to be able to keep the insurance you had, and it may not even resemble the insurance you had if it still is out there because of the government mandates. And on energy policy, I think this is one of his biggest failures. Yes, we are having a bit of a boom in oil and gas, but it's in spite of, not because of, the federal government. In fact, on federal lands, they have all but shut down permitting. They have taken tens of millions of acres of land and much of our offshore resources off the table. They won't even issue permits. This is, as Steve Forbes said, the most anti-oil and gas administration in U.S. history, and all you got to do to find the evidence of that is go to a gas pump and see that gas today is about twice what it was when Barack Obama took office. And that's not by accident. That's by design. Stephen Chu, his energy secretary, said they wanted to implement policies to get our gas prices in line with those in Europe. They're well on their way, Michael. I mean, by any measure, he has failed at the objectives that he identified for himself and yet he's out there trying to make a case for reelection. In the private industry, which is where I spent almost all of my life, you get fired for failure, not given a new contract and a bonus to go with it.
How can the Obama administration spokespeople actually claim that the president has improved the economy? Has he? I mean, gas is almost $6 a gallon. How do they get that interpretation, and from what data are they using?
They're playing more than just a little bit fast and loose with numbers. They point to the unemployment number, for example, as having gone down some of late. They conveniently forget to point to the obvious that they said it would be less than 6% today. We're still at 8.3, and that again is extremely generous because the only reason it's really going down is because of the about 4 or 5 million people that have walked away, just left the workforce, aren't even looking for work anymore because they're so very disappointed. That goes back to the labor participation rate again. He does point to some increase in consumer activity, and that's good news, except that when you put it in relative terms, the increase in consumer spending, the little bit of increase in consumer spending, and even the little bit of increase in GDP that we have seen pales by comparison to any other recovery going clear back to the Depression. This, again, when you put it in appropriate context, this is the deepest and the longest recovery we have had in America since the Great Depression. And he wants to feign success. It's simply not true. I'm not trying to be partisan here. I'm just trying to look at the numbers, and the numbers don't lie.
My assessment of the green jobs industry is that it's all fraudulent. It's all kickbacks. What is your assessment of such?
Well, if you happen to be a fan of crony capitalism, I guess it's been a great success. The Washington Post, of all places, just did a fine expose pointing out that billions and billions of dollars went to no surprise, I suppose, now that we've seen the evidence, contributors to Barack Obama's campaign, people that had helped him in his election, they brought into the White House, and surprise, surprise, firms that they were connected to, investors in, got hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars of the supposed stimulus money. And they did it blindly. I mean, if you're going to assist the free market somehow, be very, very careful in how you do it, because it's pretty easy to tip the table. What they did in the case of Solyndra and in the case of NR1, specifically another one of the green energy companies that went bankrupt, they were absolutely blind to the amount of demand there was for product, and they simply funded everybody who could say green energy, and especially solar. They were throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at them to create product for a market that simply didn't exist yet. They oversupplied the marketplace. And guess what happens when you oversupply the marketplace? Somebody goes broke and out of business, and that's exactly what happened. I'm a fan. I think we ought to do research. I think we ought to try to find other sources of energy. But they have to have viability in the marketplace, and the so-called green energy technologies, for the most part, simply are not there yet. At the same time, he's been promoting the fantasy, the myth of green energy as our solution. They have had a very anti-oil, gas, and coal agenda, and those are three sources of energy of which we have a great abundance, of which we know how to harvest, we know how to do it safely and cleanly, and, oh, by the way, we depend for 85% of all the energy we consume in America from those three sources, and yet he wants to put the kibosh on them and have us somehow flip a magic switch and be on energy sources that really are not financially viable yet. The great paradox in all of that to me is that the obvious economies expand, wealth is created, jobs are created in economies that have an access to a sustainable supply of affordable energy. And Barack Obama has done everything he can to diminish our supply, especially domestic supply, of that affordable energy, driving up prices and limiting the supply.
Bob Beaupre, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Michael, great to talk to you. Let's do it again.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, talk about food. All of you people who are idiotic and think that raw food is good for you, all of you deluded fools who think that by eating raw you're going to live forever, I have a little news for you. I'm one of the few people in the media who actually knows something about food and nutrition because I have a doctorate in the field and I've written many, many books in the field prior to becoming a talk show host. So take it from an expert. The reason man learned to use fire to cook his food was because, A, you're not an animal. B, raw food is very dangerous. It's filled with microbes. It is filled with toxins of various kind. And, in fact, Claude Lévi-Strauss, the great anthropologist, wrote, 50 years ago, that fire, meaning he wrote a book called The Raw and the Cooked, in which he philosophized that the distinguishing factor between the primitive and the civilized human was the fact that the civilized human learned to cook and eat cooked food. So I know there's a big trend in America to eat raw food, but I want to warn you about something. Listen to me very, very carefully. There's a story, a young man went to Hawaii, and a few days later he got crippled from something he didn't know why, and wound up in a wheelchair. Months of recovery. And he didn't quite know what had happened to him. It took a while for the doctors, the brilliant doctors, and they did, to figure out that he was suffering from a rat-borne illness. And he said, I didn't contact any rats. Okay, rats, like other mammals or other animals, in fact, have droppings. The droppings fall on the earth. I know it's disgusting. Slugs eat the droppings. Slugs crawl on vegetables. You following the sequence here? Try to follow me. Rat droppings on the ground. Slugs eat the rat droppings. The slugs crawl on vegetables. You eat raw vegetables. You ingest the droppings. You get this illness. And it's a horrendous neurotoxin, terrible illness, months of recovery, paralysis, etc. So what is the moral of the story? Well, you can make a joke at it if you wish, but you can also learn to stop eating raw food. Your mother was right, cook vegetables. Your mother was right, wash vegetables. I don't care whether it says organic or shmorganic. You know, first of all, half the organic food is not organic. That's like saying solar panels are going to save us from the fossil fuel industry. Organic vegetables, you don't know if they're really organic. Some are certified organic. Who knows, really? With the corruption in government and whatnot, whether it's on a state or local level, it's very hard to tell. So, I mean, I eat organic food where I can get it. Don't get me wrong. I am as fanatic as I can be without becoming, you know, overly crazy about it all. But the fact is, for God's sakes, will you listen to Uncle Michael and wash your vegetables, cook your vegetables, don't eat raw food. Stop listening to the whack jobs who are telling you. I know the story. Oh, enzymes. They tell you enzymes. And they don't know what they're talking about. They don't even know what an enzyme is. They have no idea what an enzyme is, but they give you it's the enzymes in the raw food. That's, you don't get the enzymes that you get in cooked. The enzymes are killed in the, you know what? They don't know what they're talking about. It's like running. Same with the running. I went through this in the 60s and 70s. I have nothing against running. I don't run. I ran for years, and I stopped running at age 30 when I heard an inner voice screaming at me, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running, stop running, running, running. I was running up a mountain trail every day in the back of a valley in California. And eventually my inner voice was screaming, stop running, running. And I stopped and never ran again. I ride a bicycle every day, but moderately. You've got to take the Asian approach to exercise, which is moderate, 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 moderate. You want to elevate your heart level very slightly. Don't to the point where you're thumping in your head. You're going to get a heart attack or a stroke. I can guarantee you, or you're going to burn out at a very young age. Obviously, you're going to burn out your joints with running. That you know already. How many runners do I know that by the time they were 40, they had a knee replacement, a hip replacement? So watch out with this extremism in your exercise. Take the Taoist approach. Believe me, I know what I'm saying with regard to this. And it's the same with food. Stop with the extremism. First, America is eating the worst food on the planet. you know, the high fry diet, as the first lady seems to prefer, while telling you to eat carrot sheets, fries. And now all of a sudden they're going to the raw side so they can be in the Occupy movement better. It gives them more strength to scream and screech in the Occupy movement if they have a raw carrot before they do it like a rabbit. All my life as a child, I wished I'd been born rich. I wish my father had a business I could go into. I don't know what the virtue is in being born poor. I don't get it. Every politician is tripping over themselves to say, well, we lived in a, remember Al Gore? He lived in a trailer with Tipper. Remember that one during the campaign? Oh, yeah, we suffered violence. His father was the guy worked for Occidental Coal Company, Al Gore's father. I love it. They made money on both sides of that issue. The original Gore fortune was made by Senator Al Gore when he went to work for Arm & Hammer in Occidental Coal. The son realized coal was out and green was in, so he came up with the lying theory about man-induced global warming. And man, has he cleaned up on this. Has he certainly fueled his financial fires with that big shtick. But they all want to be poor. Every politician boasting about it. We suffered. We lived in one room. I had to live through. It was awful. We were on bread lines. My father was an immigrant. Even if they came over with the Mayflower now, they're hiding it. I mean, if I were a son of the American Revolution, I would tell you about it. I'd be very proud of it, but I'm not. My father was an immigrant. I'm a first-generation American. I got one foot in the old world, one foot in the new, which gives me my unique perspective on what's going on in the United States of America. I don't see the virtue in being poor. I really don't. In fact, it was Somerset Maugham, one of my favorite authors. No one knows him anymore, but the man was a fabulous novelist, British, of course.
Savage.